Welcome to Scott in the Second, the real estate stories, unfiltered, unedited. I'm Scott Eckhoff, managing broker at Foundations Realty, powering Rival Real Estate and 5281 Exclusive Homes Realty. I appreciate you joining. Let's get started. Welcome to Scott in the Second, the real estate stories. I'm Scott Eckhoff. Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed our last series, which was listing your home, ready, set, sold. I think it brought a lot of good information. So this series, and it's going to vary if I can get it done in one, or two, or three. It's really going to be kind of open this time. I really want to cover a lot of information, and sometimes my brain is going too quickly. Sometimes it's going vastly, and the information just wants to come out. So we're going to talk about real estate terms, and we are not going to limit this just to real estate. It will uncover the process. So from a realtor standpoint, a lending standpoint, to some extent, insurance, and so on. I want you to understand the words that are being thrown around. Now, these are not going to be in any particular order. It's going to just, it's a list of things that came up. So I have a list for this episode, and I'd like to get through them, hopefully. And if not, we'll just go to another episode. If we don't get through that list, we'll just continue. But there's a lot. And I think I only get this cough when I talk to you guys. It's so funny. But before I forget, tonight's glass of wine is from Bialy in Napa, California. It is a Petite Syrah. It's very nice, very smooth. Not usually something I would drink, but it's actually very good. So let's go back. One of the lessons I have learned is, and I think most people in business, right? When we speak to people, speak to them so they can understand you. And that's tricky because sometimes we need to use the professional jargon and the terminology in order to convey information without taking 20 minutes to explain something. However, it doesn't mean that we need to use the hardest words or acronyms and things to make it confusing. And what one person may know, excuse me, another person may not. So I'm going to do my best to use some words and help you understand some and what they are, and just give a little bit of a conversation for each one. So here we go. The first word that people use, and I'm going to give you a definition first. People will ask you, are you working with the realtor? Are you working with the real estate agency? And if your answer is yes, they'll say, well, have you signed any paperwork? And what we're referring to is agency. We're trying to create an agency so we can represent you. So our word is agency. And what agency is, and there's always various kinds, but we're going to refer to the most common, is the exclusive right. And for a buyer, it's the exclusive right to buy. And for a seller, it's exclusive right to sell. And what that means is we are your designated, dedicated agent to represent you. So other people cannot do it, but we can. And we call it agency because the agency, the brokerage, owns those contracts. And it's very important. It's important because of what you get from that. You know, it's, and it also avoids what we call an implied agency. So if we're looking at homes and you ask me, what do you think of this price? What do you think of if we do upgrades? And I start giving you advice and I start advising you. It's implied I represent you. And that's never a good thing. I mean, it happens. We all just start casually speaking after a couple meetings. And before you know it, we've created implied agency. Hopefully, that relationship is strong enough to where then we can say, I would feel that I'm comfortable being your realtor. What do you think about signing some representation paperwork and creating an agency with me? So that is one thing that you'll hear, and it's said many different ways, but it's important to understand because it is a critical, critical step in the beginning of allowing that representation for you. Another word you hear in various aspects with various words before or after is inspection. Now, I think, excuse me, in general, we understand what inspection is, right? We're inspecting something. We're looking at things in detail to find out some information. But it's, what are we inspecting? What kind of inspections are there? So here is my 25 cents worth. Typically, we do an inspection because we're buying a home. You want to know, and this is regardless if the seller gave you a disclosure form, you want to know what is wrong with the house. What problems am I purchasing? Or what problems may I ask to have resolved? And so we inspect. We have inspectors. Some states they need to be licensed. Other states they do not. And they come out and they look at everything. And between you and me, as a realtor, we love inspectors because they help prepare you. However, a faceplate that's loose over a outlet is probably not something we really need to put in a report. I understand it's their job, but sometimes it's just overwhelming. But their job is to inspect things about the home. Make sure the appliances are working. Make sure the lights are working. Are all of your HVAC, your hot water heater? Are they working? Have they changed the filter? What's the roof like? Right? Those are things that they're inspecting. And depending on how you buy an inspection, which you pay for as a buyer 99% of the time, there's various types, right? So you have an inspection. You have a premium package. So maybe they're using a heat sensor. Maybe they're looking for water damage, right, with infrared. You have a sewer. So we call it a sewer scope, but it's a sewer scope inspection. What does your plumbing look like from your home to the street? Is everything getting in there? Are there any breaks that we can't see underground? Termite inspections, roof inspections, structural inspections. I mean, there's, you know, a septic inspection, radon inspection. So radon, depending on what part of the country, is important. It's the breakdown of uranium that can supposedly cause cancer when it's released into the air. And it comes from the bedrock where your house is built in. So we have mitigation for that, right? So the inspection is really, the deal is I want to see what I'm inheriting to make sure that I'm getting the value for what I'm buying. And now we're going to jump more on the sell side. I'm going to make sure we talk about everybody, right? A good word that you hear a lot is probably a CMA. That's Charlie Martha Apple. And that stands for, and there's different words, it can stand for competitive market analysis, comprehensive market analysis. But what that is that's going to come from your realtor. And they're working on getting you information because you want to list your home. And we need to know how much to list the home for. And we want to list it for the best price that is supportive. And this report is going to show you the information on your home. So when we pull that, it may say it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, but you've expanded and it didn't record with the assessor's office. So it's a 4-bedroom, 3-bath. Right, so the report's going to give us the information. It's going to tell us what properties are for sale currently on the market, which ones are under contract in the market, and which ones have sold in the market in your neighborhood. And we try to keep it pretty tight. If we can't get numbers, then we expand the search. We go back further on dates. We may go further out as far as distance, but we want to look at similar homes, similar size, a number of bedrooms, lot size, style, updating, right? So we're taking this and we're doing a comparison of what the market is, and then that can tell us how we should list your house, what that dollar sign is. And then from there, you have your discussion on what you need and want and so on and so forth. But it's a great starting point and it makes a really good report for you to see. And honestly, once you close on your home, you want your realtor to maybe give you one of these at a 6-month and a year window to see if you have any equity, if things have gone up. It's kind of a nice little treat. Speaking of what your home is worth, our next term that I want to cover that's very similar is an appraisal. Now, this is not done by your realtor, so do not think that we do these, is a very detailed. Think of when we talk about inspections, how detailed that inspector gets. It's almost overwhelming for us to have to then go through it. The appraiser is going to do a very similar thing. Now, if you're paying cash, you would pay for one on your own and hire them. If you are taking out a loan, a mortgage, the lender will require this because they want to know how much the home is worth before they lend on it. It helps with their risk mitigation. So it's done by someone that is licensed. It's a professional. And the appraiser comes out, measures your house, looks at your house. He goes in your home, right, if you're selling it. And it's on the buy side. So the buyer has the lender. And they're getting all of these numbers. And they're going to start pulling the same similar data that we did. But then they're going to look at it and say, okay, John's home that he has for sale that Sarah wants to buy is listed for $500,000 and Sarah's offer is for $500,000. Well, there's a house down the street that's under contract, and we're going to find out what that might be. And there's another one on the other block that just sold 2 weeks ago. And these three houses all look the same, same style, except one has air conditioning, one has an extra bedroom. They're going to assign values. So they're going to decrease or they're going to increase values what something has or is missing. So these homes, from a theoretical aspect, are alike. And they're going to say, okay, if they were all the same home, what number am I going to get? 490, this one's at 510, you're listing this one at 500. You know what? It looks good. I'm going ahead. I feel comfortable appraising it at $500,000. So the lender wants to go ahead and move forward. It's a interesting process. If you're buying a condo, it's almost a slam dunk for the appraiser because the majority of the condos are similar size. And it's just, what are they selling for? What are they going for? If everyone's listing at 325 and they're closing at 325, chances are you're going to appraise at 325. If everyone's listed at 275 and they're closing at 275, you probably aren't going to get 325. Unless there's something just spectacular that the appraiser can justify. Now, if you do not get the number you need, which should be the number your offer is, then it leaves room for negotiation. But that's not always the case, and we will talk about those kind of things later. But that's essentially what the appraisal is, and the buyer typically pays for it. Now, there are exceptions. If you're putting, you know, more money down, sometimes the lender can get you a waiver because you don't need it, and the seller loves that because then there's no risk for another conversation. So great thing, great term, goes really well with the CMA, and we're hoping everything in the world aligns with that. I'm going to kind of go on a lending term, and we hear these quite a bit, and I've had quite a few clients ask me about them. And I get asked, what is a prepaid? My lender keeps saying I need my down payment, my closing cost, and that will also include my prepaids. Now, I'm not a lender, so I don't want to overstep, but I do want to offer you a little bit of information. Typically, your prepaids are things that you need to pay in advance because it's being transferred to you or it's being paid by your mortgage out of escrow. It's the best way to look at it. So, for example, I'm closing on a home. I have a mortgage I'll be taking out. So my lender needs me to have homeowner's insurance. Now, of course, they have the requirements, and your insurance person will know this. But I'm going to get a policy. I'm getting it through company A, B, and C, and it is $1,200 for the year. So that's $100 a month. Your lender, it's part of your mortgage payment, is going to go ahead and pay that for you. And that comes out of escrow. What escrow is essentially a collection of part of your monthly payment to your mortgage that is used to pay insurance and these prepaids. So you don't have an escrow account when you first start. So you're prepaying so these things can be taken care of from day one. And then going forward, part of that mortgage payment will put money into this account to pay them for you. So insurance is a great example. Do not be surprised when you're looking at your statement to close and that $1,200 may say $1,400 or $1,500. They will take a few extra months on average, so you kind of get a start in case things go up for the following year. Taxes are something they will put in there because they're going to need to pay that tax bill. Or when it's coming due, they'll have to pay that tax bill, right? So you're prepaying for something that you now took over. Those are the two big ones. I'm going to leave it there because I'm not a lender. But those are usually the ones that we see a lot that people want to know about. So real easy word. And it does confuse people because every state and every MLS is different. But when a seller takes an offer and the buyer takes the offer, so if the buyer signed and the seller took the offer, or if there's a counter, but everyone's come together, everything is signed, and the house goes under contract, you will see a lot where it will say pending or pending showing for backups or pending, accepting backup offers. So the word pending is the same as under contract. They have accepted an offer on the home. If it allows for backups or for showings, that means you can still go see it. And you might want to write an offer anyway in case that first one falls through. Maybe they want to take your offer. And then if you don't find something before then you've got yourself a place to work on. But it gets confusing because sometimes you'll see under contract. You'll see pending. You'll see offer accepted. But really pending is it's pending the offer to go from acceptance to close. Now, one of my not-so-favorite terms, and unfortunately it was where the market was for quite some time, escalation. And I will also say escalator. People use it. It drives me crazy because it has some validity with the word escalator, but we prefer to say escalation. An escalation clause. Here is what it is. You are going to put in an offer. Oh, let's use a listing. You want to buy a home, it's listed at $300,000. Get a little drink here real quick, sorry. So good. So for $300,000, this is the home. You have to have this home. You were pre-approved for $450,000. So it's well in your budget. And you're putting $100,000 down. Okay? So you've got money. The house is listed at $300,000. You're going to go ahead and you're going to go a little over. The market's strong, but it's not crazy. So you're going to put in an offer of $315,000. You hear that there's other offers. So you're not sure if that's going to be enough. They did not want to tell your agent, which would be me. So we want to do a little bit of competition. We don't really want to pay more. But we want it, so we're willing to pay more. So we're going to start at 315, and we're going to say we are willing to go up $1,000 more than the highest bid, up to $330,000. So that is your escalation. Your bid, your offer, is $315,000. You're saying if another offer comes in before your offer is accepted, and once your offer is accepted, that escalation needs to stop, and that wording needs to be there. But if someone else comes in and puts an offer in for $320,000, you're willing to go $1,000 over that. So now your offer would be evoked if they choose to take it, and it would be $321,000. So see how that works. So you're escalating your price. And what it does is it gives you a way to come in and put in an offer at a number you're comfortable with, but give you flexibility to go higher. The reason I don't like these is my theory is this. If you want the house, put in your best offer. If you really are comfortable paying $330,000 and you think it's worth $330,000, pay $330,000. You're right. There could be no other offers. They could be in the 290s or $310,000 and you could have won at $315,000. You never know. However, there could be somebody that put an offer in at $315,000 with an escalation clause up to $350,000. So you got beat anyway, right? Because theirs will go $1,000 over yours. They just make for a lot of sticky situations. It's just one of those things I don't prefer to do for my clients. I usually tell them if we have to, you know, we need to write strong language, and you want to make sure as a buyer that you're putting in there, once the escalation clause is evoked and the price is accepted, it will not escalate over any other offers that come in during the process before closing. Because if you write it too loosely and you go under contract at 321 and someone submits an offer at 330 when you're already under contract, the wording does not stop that seller from going, I have an offer at 330, you need to escalate, right? So if it's within your escalation clause, in all reality, if it's not worded properly, you're on the hook. So it leaves a lot of emptiness into the world of a transaction that's already pretty bad. But they have a place. I'm going to skip one I have on my list because it takes a little bit. But I'm going to hop to the next one, contingency. I'm going to start before I give the full definition of a contingency. There's many examples, but I'm going to give the definition. I know I just said I wasn't going to. See, I'm telling you, brains everywhere today. So much information I want to share. So I'm excited I can break this up into a couple series. Think of a contingency as something that needs to happen. So step A needs to happen in order for step B to occur, right? So when we think about, I have a contingency, I am contingent on my home selling and closing in order to buy your home. 9 times out of 10, that's what people consider the contingency. What we don't know is anything that we do that allows us to move forward or to hinder us from moving forward, that is, we're contingent on that contract continuing. For example, I have a right to do an inspection. I have an inspection objection deadline, the deadline that I have to give you what I want fixed. And then we have a resolution or termination deadline. Sometimes they're the same. Where you're going to tell me what you're willing to do, and then I decide if I want that, right? That is contingent. That is an inspection contingency. The deal is contingent on us getting through inspection. If I'm taking out a mortgage, I have a financial contingency. I am contingent on that loan getting approved before we close and whatever those deadlines may be. We have an appraisal contingency. The sale can't go through until we get through appraisal and we agree if we need to do adjustments or not and we move forward to close. It is contingent on that coming back and a resolution occurring. So don't, when people say contingency, it's not just about you having to sell your house. It's anything where there is an A and a B that have to be resolved or not to move forward or to terminate a contract. That's the best way to think about it. So anytime you want to do something in order to get something done, to move forward or to terminate, it is contingent on that being successful or failing. So really good word. I'm going to throw out an easy one. I think it's time for an easy one for everyone's brains. If you're scribbling down a notebook and writing down paper, that's great. The good thing with the podcast, you just rewind me and listen to me again because you love to listen. But disclosures. I think we get a lot of questions on disclosures and what exactly are the disclosures. The disclosures, and it's hard to give a definition on something that really, the definition's best definition is the word itself. But there are many disclosures, and the point of a disclosure is to portray, relay information, whether it's known or letting you know it's not known, of a home. So, for example, a seller provides you a lead-based paint disclosure because their home is 1954, for example. Right, so anything before 1978, 99% of the time, the seller probably does not know that there's lead-based paint. They can make an assumption because the home is old. At some point, there's lead-based paint in there. They will either say, I don't know, or I know. And then you're going to take the disclosure and accept that or test for it, right? That's kind of how it works. But they're disclosing to you if they know or not. The big one is the seller's property disclosure. And this one is, I don't have words. I really don't. This is the very lengthy one where the seller is going through as much detail on the infrastructure of the home. The roof, the structure, the HVAC, the plumbing, you know, everything you can think about. And it's age. Were there issues? If there were issues, were they resolved? Or what steps did you take to resolve them? Did you not resolve them? Did you replace anything? You know, there's a hailstorm and the roof got replaced. So it's just a lot of questions. What is going on with the house? What do you know? If you don't know, you don't disclose. If you know, you disclose. Now, the funny thing is, and this is my little 2 cents, and it's probably not going to be favorable to everybody, but a lot of times you'll see things where if someone bought it as a flip, they did a bunch of work, and then they're selling it. And the agent will say, no seller's property disclosure, did not live here. Okay. So when you flip the home and you put a new electrical box in or a new furnace, you didn't know the age of that brand new furnace you just put in, 2023. You didn't know that there was a sinking sewer line in the front yard that you dug up and replaced. You know something. Just because you didn't live there, you did the work, right? So you fixed it. Or people that have an investment property and they've been renting it out, and maybe they never did live there, and now they're selling it. So you can't tell me over the course of the time you owned it, you never did maintenance on it, sprinkler system never went out, the AC never went out, and you didn't repair or replace for your tenants. You can't tell me that never happened. You don't need to live somewhere to know what's going on. And if you see those, I encourage you to tell your agent to push to get information. It is not okay to leave information blank. You know something. For example, if I inherited my mother's home, unless she was estranged from me, right? But I go over there, I see the house. I couldn't tell you the exact years, but I would say kitchen was remodeled in 2018. I would pick a year. If I knew that she had a new window put in, right, I could at least say there were certain updates. You should know something. If you don't, it's okay. If it's an inheritance and you're estranged, right, that may make sense. But do put in some effort. Make sure your disclosures, the information that you are receiving, is putting out good karma in the world. Because when you go to look and buy something, you don't want to be on that receiving end. All right, I'm going to do one more. One more for the night. And this is really a real estate / lending term. And it's hard to understand. And it's going to cause me to have a drink of wine first because it's something. All right, are you ready? Here is the $1 million word of this particular episode. Appraisal gap. Oh, there it is. I said it. You know what? I also figured red wine makes me stuffy when I do these. Maybe I'll do white wine next time. What is an appraisal gap? I'm going to try to make this easy. And I'm sure there's going to be a million people that are lenders that are saying I'm not quite right. So I'm going to give you the best explanation from a realtor. That's my job, as I can without overstepping my boundaries. Here we go. You're buying a home for $400,000. That's the list price. You put in an offer for $450,000. You're approved for $500,000, so pre-approval is fine. And you're putting $100,000 down. Okay? You know the home is not going to be appraised at $450,000. Your realtor told you, but you have to have it. Fine, we're under contract, and you're doing an appraisal gap because you want to make sure your offer got taken. What you're doing is telling the seller, as a buyer, that you are willing to pay the difference at the closing table between your offer and the appraisal up to a certain point. It can be the entire amount, or it can be a portion of that amount. So here's what we're going to do. Do two quick scenarios, and we're going to be over 30 minutes, but that's okay. $450, you're going to cover the entire thing. Appraisal comes in at $410,000. That's $40,000 under. So you're going to go ahead and you're putting $100,000 down. You have two options. You can put $100,000 down and an additional $40,000. Or you ask your lender, hey, I'm going to cover that $40,000. If I only put $60,000 down, what are the terms of my loan? So you can reduce your down payment to cover the difference. But you're covering the difference between what it's appraised for and what your offer is. And in this particular instance, you're covering that entire amount. So similar situation, $450, home's listed at $400, $100,000 down, you're approved for well more. Appraisal comes in at $410, but you only put in a $25,000 appraisal gap. So what you're saying is, you're willing to pay $450. If the appraisal comes back less than $450, you will pay that difference, but only up to $25,000 difference, which means it needs to appraise at $425 or higher for the seller and you not to have to have a conversation. That's fine. So it's very similar to the first one. But let's say it appraised at that $410. Now we have a $15,000 difference, right? You're going up to $425. There's this $15,000 between the $410 and the $425. What do we do? Well, the seller can say, I'm not doing anything. You get your earnest money and it terminates and you don't get your dream home. The seller can drop it by $15,000, or you can come up with yet another $15,000. But let's say you couldn't. So that's what an appraisal gap is. And it was very big when everybody was overbidding. You know, $50,000, $75,000, $100,000, $200,000 over the price because they wanted a home so bad. Because the interest rates were low and it just went crazy. And we're not going to talk about the interest rates. I'm going to do a special on that one because I'm very passionate about it. But that's what people were doing. They were willing to pay more out of their pocket to cover that so they could get the house. It's a scary thing. It can affect your loan if you're taking it out of your down payment. So these are conversations you want to talk to your lender about. If you have a substantial amount of money down, and you need to take it out of that down payment to cover that difference, what does your loan look like? Your payments may be something you don't want. So make sure you're getting that. And that really needs to have a conversation with your lender and with your real estate broker helping you with that. I really hope you enjoyed these terms. This is just one of many. I think I'm going to do two more episodes. And I might get creative in some of the words. We might kind of put them together as a complete, or I might just do one more. We'll see. I really like to just really make sure you're getting the information and not pigeonhole us into a 3-series episode or a 2-series episode. I like having the fluidity to make sure you're getting what you need. As always, keep sharing therealestatestories.com. You can also find this on my website under my blog, which is scott.yourrealestatebrokers.com. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to some special ones coming up to just have some conversations on Tuesdays. So I'll let you know when those come out by posting it on the podcast site or on social media. Because I obviously can't tell you today if there's one on Tuesday because I'm not sure when that's going to happen. But anyway, you have a wonderful day. I'm Scott Eckhoff, Managing Broker at Foundations Realty, powering 5281 Exclusive Homes Realty and Rival Real Estate. I hope everyone's having a wonderful time, and we will talk next time. Goodbye. Thank you for listening to Scott in a Second, The Real Estate Stories, unfiltered, unedited. I'm Scott Eckhoff, Managing Broker at Foundations Realty, powering Rival Real Estate in the Kansas City metro area and 5281 Exclusive Homes Realty in the Denver metro area. Stay tuned for next week. Always released Thursday at 9 a.m.